Osho, Beyond Psychology, Responses to Disciples' Questions, given in Punta del Este, Uruguay. Discourse number 29.
Love of the One. Any speech prepared for his followers after his car accident, Gurdjieff said, "Again I repeat that the Institute is closed. I died. The reason is that I was disenchanted with people after all that I have done for them, and I have seen how well they have paid me for it. Now, inside me, everything is empty." Recently, when Krishnamurti died, I felt that somehow he too died disenchanted. Bhagwan, over the years with you, we have built great castles in the sand and have seen them destroyed. Yet when I see you these precious mornings and evenings, you seem so genuinely happy to see us. Do you ever get disenchanted with us?
It is not only for George Gurdjieff or J. Krishnamurti . It is true for hundreds of masters down the ages. And there are reasons they all died disenchanted, disappointed, disillusioned. Let us go deeper first into George Gurdjieff's last statement. And the last statement of anybody is the most significant statement of his whole life. In a certain way, his whole life is condensed in his last statement. He was disenchanted because the disciples failed him, betrayed him, went against him, did everything to harm him. And these were the people for whom he has devoted his whole life. each single moment of it. But still, in his place, I will not be disenchanted. He thought that he is doing a very serious work. That's where is the seed of his disenchantment. I'm not doing any serious work. I'm not doing work at all. It is my joy. To share it with you. Now what you do with it, it is your problem, not mine. You cannot disappoint me. You can betray me. There are people who have done that. You can do any kind of harm imaginable, and people have done that. You can go against me. You can say lies about me. Still, I will not be disenchanted, because in the first place, I had never expected you. Anything. The disappointment comes from expectation. The disenchantment comes from a deep hope that these people are going to fulfill my work. I don't have any expectation, any hope. I'm just so blissful that I cannot contain it. I want to share it unconditionally. It is the conditions which create disappointment. And Gurdjieff had worked hard with great expectations. And even people like P.D. Ouspensky, who had learned everything from the master. Denied him. He himself became a master. He stopped even using his full name, Gurdjieff. He had to mention at certain points he will use only G. He will not allow his own disciples to go to Gurdjieff, even to see him. And Gurdjieff had worked on this man. For years, decades, and whatever he is saying after separating himself from Gurdjieff, each single word, each single insight is borrowed. It is not his own. Certainly, he had a great talent . He was one of the best writers I have come across. Gurdjieff was not a writer. Ouspensky was a great logician, a world-famous mathematician, a great writer. Gurdjieff was nothing of these things. He was purely a mystic. Gathering everything of the system of Gurdjieff, Ouspensky was in a position to write beautiful treatises as if they are his own experience. Gurdjieff cannot compete with him in writing. Neither in his speaking. He was a very talented genius, well educated. Gurdjieff was uneducated. Coming from a very undeveloped tribe in the Caucasus, from Soviet Russia. But he had the whole mine of diamonds, but they were all uncut, unpolished. Only a man who has the eyes of a jeweler would have been able to recognize them. Otherwise, there were just stones. Aspensky had the eyes of a jeweler. He recognized it, that this man has a treasure, but has not the talent to spread it. A great chance of exploitation. He learned everything from him. And that day he felt that now it is enough. He can make a system out of all this. He betrayed him. And he had to prevent his disciples not to go to him. Because personality-wise, Aspensky was just a school teacher. Looked like a school teacher. Even while teaching mysticism, there was a blackboard. He was a mathematician. He will be teaching mysticism and writing on the blackboard. It was like a class, a university class. His students were taking notes. Gurdjieff had a tremendously charismatic personality. Anybody who had seen him once could not forget the man. In a crowd of millions, he will still stand out. If you have looked into his eyes once, those eyes will follow you your whole life. He was not a man of words. But a man of a tremendous, powerful being. And that was the fear of Aspensky, that if his disciples go, then whatever he has been saying against him is going to be exposed. And if they listen to that man, although he is not articulate, he was the most articulate master ever. To say a simple thing, he will take hundreds of pages. You have to find it out where it is, what really he wants to say. He will make his own words big, long words, spreading over the whole line, a single word that you have never heard. It is his invention. He knew nothing about how to write. One paragraph will go running for pages. No publisher was ready to publish his books. He had to publish them himself. When his first book was published, it was 1,000 pages. It is one of the strangest books in the world. All and everything. He kept 900 pages uncut, and only 100 pages, that is the preface, were cut. With a note to every customer who purchases it, that you read the preface. If you feel that it is worth to read on, then you can cut the remaining 900 pages. But if you feel it is not worth, you can take your money back, return the book, but don't cut the uncut pages. Those 100 pages are enough example. Even to understand those 100 pages is a strange experience. Particularly for those who don't know anything about mystics and their strange ways. Now, he was not in any way able to compete with his own disciples. His books are so lucid, so beautifully written, so poetic. That I have not seen any other man who comes close to him, even close to him. Khalil Gibran writes well. Michael Nemi writes well. But they don't come even close to Ouspensky. Gurdjieff had hoped much that Ouspensky will carry on his work. Rather than carrying on, he simply opened his own school against Gurdjieff, teaching everything. Because it is impossible to add. The system is complete and perfect. You cannot take anything out, you cannot put anything in. But he was a great teacher. Ouspensky. He was not a master. He influenced many people around the world. Millions of people came to know of Gurdjieff only through Ouspensky. What a strange fate. And he was consistently trying to oppose him. It was very difficult because his whole teaching was borrowed from the man, but it was a logical necessity. He had to oppose Gurdjieff so that nobody thinks that he has borrowed all this teaching from Gurdjieff. It is an existential necessity that any disciple who betrays and wants to use the master's teaching to become himself a master is bound to oppose the master, to create lies about the master. And it naturally was hurting him. And it was not only Ouspensky, there were many others who were doing the same. For years Gurdjieff will work on them, and then one day they have turned his enemies. And to justify that why they have left Gurdjieff, they had to invent lies. They had to create a false image of Gurdjieff. Ouspensky has a strategy. He said, till I was with Gurdjieff, he was right. And when I saw that he's going astray, I left him. Gurdjieff has gone astray. That's why the disciple has left. Up to that point, he was right so that he can use his teachings without any difficulty. But beyond that point, for him, Gurdjieff does not exist at all. And this was being done with many disciples. And if Gurdjieff was working with great expectations, naturally he was getting wounded, hurt. He could not believe that these are the people for whom he has lived and he has died. His whole life he has sacrificed, and these are the people. That's why he says, that the institution is closed, is dead. He was afraid that after his death, his institution will also be used in the same way. The institution is dead because I am dead. And this was all the wounds of his life saying together. This statement is the statement of his whole life, that the man is cunning, coward, deceptive, hypocrite. You cannot trust anybody. This is his whole life's experience. You cannot trust anybody. He trusted many and he gave everything that he had, and still what they have returned, not even gratitude. He was not asking for anything else. No reverence, no gratitude, no respect. On the contrary, great antagonism, opposition, all kinds of fictions condemning him. Naturally, he was disappointed. But my approach is totally different. I trust you not because of your trustworthiness. Otherwise, the same will be my experience. I do not have to wait for my death to come. Already I have worked with people for years, and they have repaid me very well. I trust you because I cannot distrust. So there is no burden on you. You can betray me, but you cannot hurt me. I had trusted you not because of you, but because of me. And I am still there, the same. See the difference. To trust a person is possible in two ways. Either because of his trustworthiness, then there is danger, there is risk. are because you enjoy trusting. That the trustworthiness or unworthiness have no relevance. Secondly, Gurdjieff and all these people took their work very seriously. The transformation of man, the transformation of human society, they took it too seriously. And when people did not prove up to their seriousness, they felt that something is basically wrong with me, that nothing can be done about it. Then a great hopelessness arose in them. It cannot happen to me, because I am not serious at all. I do not think that existence has given me a certain responsibility. To transform man or human society. Who am I to bother about all this? I was not here one day. The society was there, the man was there, the existence was there. One day I will not be here. So just for a few days in between, an existence has not given me any job that has to be done. Why should I be serious? I am simply playful. If everybody betrays me, I will be the last to laugh. I will enjoy that moment too. I will say to myself, great. I love to play. I played well. And these people were good. As long as they could continue to be with me, they managed and continued in difficulties, in troubles. When they found out it is too much, they went on their own. Even if I am left alone, I will not be disappointed. I will simply enjoy the moment that this has been a great life. So many seasons, so many changes, so many people, so much love, so much trust. And I'm going out of life without leaving any footprints behind. I will not feel that I have wasted my life. I don't think that there could have been any better way to live and to love and to laugh. Jai Krishnamurti was very serious. I don't think he ever smiled. A long life, 90 years. And his fame started very early, 13 years old. So really, a very long life of work. And disappointments. Even the closest ones betrayed. Whole life seems to be just a series of betrayals. And those who remained never manage to understand what he is saying. They listened to him for half a century and still he could not cross their thick minds and reach to their being. And every day, if you look at his life, in the beginning, he is very hopeful, very excited. That man can be changed, that a new man can arise. But slowly, slowly, that hope disappears, that excitement is no more there. And as he grew older, he became sadder. For 20 years, just because of his seriousness, he suffered from migraine continuously. No medicine could help, no physician, and every physician told him that you are straining your whole brain system too much. You are too serious. You should relax. You have taken too much of a burden on yourself. Sometimes his migraine was so much that he would like to hit his head to the wall. While speaking, he was almost screaming, shouting, hitting his own head. Because he could not understand that such a simple thing and you are unable to understand. For example, he is explaining the same thing his whole life. That meditation cannot be done. It is a happening. And he will talk about 1 hour about the difference of doing and happening. And then somebody who is just sitting in front of him, listening attentively, stands up and asks, how can we do meditation? I would have laughed at the whole thing. But he will hit his head. Too serious. And as death was coming closer, he was becoming more and more serious, knowing now that his life has been a failure. He worked hard, immensely hard. His approach was very clean and very clear. His way of working was very logical. Very intellectual. Absolutely contemporary. An impeccable life of work. He was a perfectionist. But in the end, the hands are empty. As far as results are concerned, nothing has happened. As if he had not been here. The world goes on, the old routine, the old rut. Do you see anything that has changed because Jai Krishnamurti was born and lived for 90 years? Has it made even a scratch? Naturally, he dies in the same state. And this has been the case with thousands of masters. Because the humanity remains unevolving. And they are all too seriously after man to evolve. And naturally they fail. But I cannot fail. Because I am not concerned at all whether humanity evolves or not, whether the new man is born or not. I enjoy these ideas, and I enjoy to communicate them to people. And there I am preferably victorious. I don't need to be victorious until you change. That will be your victory. My victory is that I have been able to communicate what I wanted to communicate. Now what you do with it is your freedom. I will not call it betrayal, and I will not call it opposition, and I will not call your things lies. If you are enjoying doing these things, it is perfectly good. Enjoyment is good. If somebody is creating lies about me and is feeling perfectly happy about it, why he should be stopped? He has all my blessings. In India it happened, one man wrote a book against me. And he sent me the proof copy. I looked into it, it was all rubbish, lies, fictitious stories with no evidence. Still, I sent him my blessings and told him to print it on the first page of the book. He could not believe. He was so disturbed that what kind of man is this? He lived in Baroda, 1,000 miles away from me, but he came to see me. He had never seen me. He was just collecting third-rate yellow newspapers and cuttings and gossip, rumors, and he has managed to make a book. And he asked me that, have you seen inside, or you have simply sent blessings? I said, I have gone through word to word. It is all bullshit. But you have done so much work collecting bullshit. You need blessings. He said, but this looks strange. With your blessings, I know this book. Even while I was collecting and writing, my purpose is to earn money, and this book is going to become a bestseller. But now, seeing you and your response, I feel perhaps I should not have done this. I said, no, you continue. Let this book go into the market, collect more, because while I am alive, more and more lies will be there, more and more gossips, rumors. You can always earn money. This is a good way. And it is not a harm to me. And the picture that you have chosen for the cover is really beautiful. He said, my God, I was thinking you will be angry, ferocious. I said, why should I be angry? Why should I be ferocious? The life is so sad to be angry, to be ferocious. Even if we can manage to be blissful, that's enough. If we can manage to bless, that's enough. What you do is your business, but you have done it well. Your writing is good. What you have written is nonsense, but the way you have put it and presented is really good. and you devoted almost 1 year in my service. I cannot pay you, but I can give you my blessing. And the book was published with my blessings. And every criticism that appeared in newspapers about the book mentioned it, that it is strange that Bhagwan blesses it. And just that simple blessing cancels the whole book. My whole approach is different. So totally different. That it has never been used before. I'm enjoying everything. That has happened, is happening. Perhaps tomorrow I will be arrested. Deported. But I have been enjoying it. Then Hasya has to find the new place. So I can be deported again. We are not going to leave a single country. Unblessed. In fact, I cannot conceive a situation that will be a disappointment to me. You have to forgive me. I am simply so fulfilled and so happy, so centered. That nothing can affect me. And any new kind of situation is really a great excitement. And to live without any conditions to live with people who have total freedom to be the way they want to be is already a transformation. All old approaches have failed. Now let us see what happens to my approach. As far as I am concerned, I cannot fail. Because I am squeezing the juice of life every moment. I don't leave it for another moment. What has to be seen is how many people can become as successful, as victorious as I am. I am giving them all the cues. No, it is their problem. If they fail, they should be disappointed. Why? I should be disappointed. If they succeed, they should rejoice. I can participate in their rejoicing. But there is no way to disappoint me. Just include me out from that category. If Guruji, if Krishnamurti and others.
Another good one. I've tried for so long to write a question to you about money. The question is so complex, I can't even get it on paper. It involves friendships, self-image, integrity, trust, intelligence, identification, letting go, holding on, guilt, relationships, and most importantly, my discipleship. Please help me with the question and the answer.
Money is a strange thing. If you do not have it, it is a simple matter that you don't have it. There is no complexity. But if you have it, then it certainly creates complexity. One of the greatest problems that money creates is you never know whether you are loved or your money is loved. Whether you are desirable or your money is desirable. And it is so difficult to figure it out that one would have rather preferred not to have money. At least life would have been simple. Just few days before, Hasya was telling to me about Aristotle Onassis' daughter. I remember seeing her picture when Onassis was alive, perhaps 10 years before. She was a beautiful, well proportionate charming young girl. But Onassis died and left her with a lot of money, and that created hell for her. Since then, she has married 3 times. And each marriage fails because she thinks the person loves her money, not her. And this starts from the very beginning. The day of marriage is really the day of divorce, because on the day of marriage she takes a guarantee from the person, a legal document before the court, that he will not take his money in case divorce happens. He will not ask for money. Now, can you conceive a marriage worthwhile when on the first day the woman is asking you to give in writing before the court that you are interested in her and not in her money, and that in case a divorce happens, you will not ask for money. The divorce already has happened. In the 4th marriage, she got into more troubled waters. Before I describe the 4th marriage, something else has to be said, which was happening on the side, that she was becoming fatter, uglier, as if deep down in her psychology she wanted to prove that you love me whether I am beautiful or ugly, shapely or fat. You don't love my money. And she has become so ugly now that she avoids photographers, news media, that she hides and does not want her pictures to be taken. And perhaps because she was uncertain whether she is loved or her money, and most probably the people who have been with her were for the money, not for her. She did not receive love. The proof is that she started eating too much. If you are loved, you are so full of love, so filled with love, you don't eat too much. I have been traveling in India, staying in different families, and I have come across at least 3 women who told me the same thing. That while I am staying in their home, they cannot eat. When I was told this for the first time, I said, this is strange. Why you cannot eat? They said, we don't know, but we don't feel hungry either. We feel perfectly good. More well-being than we have ever felt. 3 days you stay and we can't eat. And we wait the whole year again when you will be back in the city for 3 days. Those 3 days become a beautiful memory. When I was told by another woman and then by another woman, I had to look into the fact, what is the matter? They felt so loved. And they loved me so much that there was not any need for food. As if love was enough nourishment. And after 3 days they did not look hungry. They did not look starved. And one of these three was a Jaina woman. And she said, "Now I know what a real fast should be." She has been fasting for almost 10 years. Long fasts, 10 days in the Jaina religion every year in the rainy season. Jainas fast for 10 days, those who are very orthodox. And she has been fasting for 10 days for almost 10 years. And she said to me, "Now I know that was not fasting. That was simply starving, because I was continuously thinking of food, food and food. I could not sleep in the night because of hunger. And even if I fell asleep for a few moments or few hours, I was dreaming of food. I was thinking of food, I was dreaming of food. Except food, there was nothing in me." In these 3 days, while you stay in my house, now I know what fasting is. I never think about food at all. Just it comes naturally that I don't feel any hunger. I feel so fulfilled. Onassis, immense riches have created a hell for the poor girl. Feeling that she is not loved, and coming not in contact with a man like me who could have told her that the question is not that you should be loved, the question is that you should love. Why bother about that? Why the other loves you? Have you ever thought about why you love the other? For what? And then you will understand the situation. Perhaps because of his hairs. But then you don't love the man. Perhaps because of his eyes. Then you don't love the man. Perhaps because of his nose, then you don't love the man. If you have any reason to love, then you don't love the man. So why you are making so much fuss about money? You should love, and you should be loved, and you should be loved more because of your money. And there is nothing wrong in it. You have something more than no other woman has. Otherwise, each thing will start creating problem. That you have a beautiful face, that's why this man loves. He does not love you. If you had a face with pock marks, this man was not going to love you. Because you have eyes, this man loves you. If you were blind, this man will not love you. Then you are creating unnecessary problems for yourself. This man certainly loves you in your totality, and your money is part of you. Why make it separate? You are rich just as somebody is beautiful. You are rich just as somebody is a dancer. But the dancer will not ask the question that, do you love me or my dance? If she asks the question, she will be in trouble. In the fourth marriage, she found out a rich man just to be certain that he himself has so much richness that he will love me. He will not love my riches. He himself is a big industrialist. And because of this, she did not repeat the ritual of going to the court after marriage and to take a certificate from the man that in a case of divorce he will not ask for money. Seeing that the man is so rich, it looked absurd to ask. But this man proved really cunning. And because there was no certificate, he divorced her and has taken almost half of her fortune. Now, something like money that could have been a great pleasure has turned out to be immense anguish. But it is not money, it is your mind.
money is useful, there is no sin in having money. There is no need to feel guilt. Otherwise, everybody should feel guilty. I should start feeling guilty that why I am enlightened, when there are so many millions of people who are not enlightened. I must commit suicide that the whole world is full of unenlightened people, and I must be immensely selfish to be enlightened. I don't ask you why you love me. You love me, or you love my enlightenment? If you love my enlightenment, then finished. Then you don't love me. But why make these divisions? This is how mind creates misery. You have money, enjoy it. And if somebody loves you, do not pose this question. Because you are putting the person in a really bad situation. If he says he loves you, you are not going to believe. And if he says he loves your money, you are going to believe. But if he loves your money, then the whole affair is finished. Deep down, you will go on suspecting that he loves your money. It is not you. But there is nothing wrong. The money is yours. Just as the nose is yours, and the eyes are yours, and the hair are yours. And this man loves you in your totality. The money is also part of you. Don't separate it, and then there is no problem. Try to live a life with as little complexities and less problems as possible. And it is in your hands. We go on creating unnecessary problems. At least being with me, you should learn that all problems are created created. There is no real problem. This question is from Abhibhava, and she has suffered from this question her whole life. And absolutely unnecessarily, your money should make your life richer. More livable. And it is making it difficult. Whenever anybody will be loving you, you are constantly thinking about the money, that this man is interested in the money. Not in me. Even if he is interested in the money, who is not interested in the money? He is being just simple human. He is not a Buddhist monk. He is interested in money, but that does not mean that he is not interested in you. He is interested in you more, because you are not only a woman, but a rich woman. Enjoy the idea. And drop this problem forever. Just come a little closer. People are afraid of coming closer. Particularly like a person like me. The fear is coming closer to me. They may be dissolved. Coming closer to me, they may disappear. So they keep a certain distance. They come only so far, so they can remain themselves, and if time comes and their mind decides to move away, they can. But if you come really close, that means you have taken a total jump, a quantum leap, that there is no going away. That now there is no possibility of going away. That now you are melting and dissolving into the unknown. People come close, but only so far. So they can escape if they want. They can turn their back if they want. Do you know the meaning of the word hippie? It simply means sowing your hips, turning your back. The hippie is one who is turning his back towards the world, its problems, its challenges. He is running, escaping. Coming close to me, don't stop until you are. Then only your candle will be lighted. And this is the beauty of candles. You can light one candle in this room, or 1,000 candles in this room. The candles may be 1,000. But the light will be one. When a disciple comes too close to the master, the candles remain two, but the light becomes one. The flames remain too. That's why I have to say, seemingly a contradictory statement, that when you dissolve into the master, for the first time you are not, and for the first time you are. You are not your old self, but you have now a new individuality. What you have lost was never yours. What you have gained was always yours, but was covered with the false. two lighted candles will create only one light in the room. There can be 2,000, there can be 2,000,000. It will not make any difference. The light will be one. So in a certain way they will be all individuals, and in a certain way they will be all part of an oceanic existence. Mm-hmm.